Welcome to El Microscopio, a program exclusively dedicated to clinical chemistry and laboratory medicine. International Federation of Clinical Chemistry, IFCC. Executive Director, Dr. Hernan Ferris Tanek.
Member of the Committee of Evidence-Based Laboratory Medicine of the International Federation of Clinical Chemistry.
Organizing Committee, Dr. Maria Montserrat Blanes Gonzalez from Paraguay, Dr. Rosa Isabel Sierra Amor from Mexico, and Dr. Estela Raimondo from Uruguay.
El Microscopio. A program exclusively dedicated to clinical chemistry.
El Microscopio, where health professionals can meet over the internet.
We are thankful to the audience. We have more than 100,300 Facebook likes. Let's go for more.
El Microscopio, a way of looking at knowledge.
The Spanish Association of Pharmaceutical Analysts and the Chilean Society of Clinical Chemistry accompany El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
A way of looking at knowledge.
Dr. Vandana Duaniyar is currently an assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Nephrology at Emory University. Dr. Duaniyar's main clinical interests are in hemodialysis and vascular access. She's one of three interventional nephrologists at the Dialysis Access Center of Atlanta and specializes in dialysis, access procedures, and maintenance of hemodialysis access, including angiograms, angioplasties, and tunneled catheters. She's also certified in renal ultrasonography.
Dr. Vandana Niyar, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
In this interview, we wanted to talk about nephrolithiasis and what are the physiopathological mechanisms related to nephrolithiasis, and can we differentiate the causes in the laboratory? Could you please tell us about the treatment? Is treatment different in each case type of nephrolithiasis?
Absolutely. So, nephrolithiasis, as you know, it originates from two Greek words. Nephros is the kidney, and lithos means stones. So basically, it's a scientific term for kidney stones. And the main pathophysiological mechanism that is responsible or related to nephrolithiasis is the supersaturation of urine. So going back to, our high school days, we know that there is only a maximum that the amount of a compound can be kept in a stable solution, and that is defined by its solubility. So when the amount of this compound in a solution exceeds the solubility, that's a supersaturation. At that point, there is a process that will begin to remove this excess by crystal formation. And this is the basic underlying pathophysiological mechanism for the formation of kidney stones, that the urine gets supersaturated with salts, like either calcium oxalate, which may lead to calcium stones, sodium urate, which may lead to uric acid stones, magnesium ammonium phosphate, which leads to the struvite stones that are commonly seen with upper urinary tract infections, or cysteine, which leads to cysteine stones. So when you consider this pathophysiology, physiological mechanism, definitely we can determine the causes in the lab, because there are these, there are many different kinds of stones, but the main are these four kind of stones. And usually what you need to do is what's called a stone analysis. So the patients can send in either their kidney stone to some commercial laboratory, and stone analysis can be done either on the stone itself, or we can have the patient collect their urine for 24 hours. And once we get these results in the lab, we can actually figure out what kind of stone the patient has. And based on the kind of stone, the treatment or the therapy can be tailored. Now, you asked me about the treatment. I kind of look at treatment of kidney stones as two different parts. So one, you actually have a kidney stone and you need to treat or dissolve that current stone, which are a lot of the surgical techniques that are used by urologists. But the second part is just as important. You want to prevent future stone formation. Any patient who's had a kidney stone knows how painful that is. And one without the other is incomplete. So both of these are integral components of the therapy. And in fact, in 95% of the patients, we can actually have or detect a treatable metabolic etiology. So the obviously the key thing to remember is that medical therapy, it prevents new stone formation, but it doesn't dissolve the pre-existing stones. For those, we have therapies like, you know, ureteroscopy, where you pass something up through the ureter, and you can actually, most commonly in the lower one-third of the urinary tract, or you can do extracorporeal shockwave lithotripsy, where you use shockwaves to break up the stone, or you can end up doing open procedures. That is the surgical component, and then, like I said, the medical component is important just as well, and it's different for different kinds of stones. The one thing that's common to all patients with stone disease is having a high fluid intake so that you have a urinary output of at least 2 liters a day. But if it's a calcium stone and you have hypercalciuria, that means you're excreting a lot of calcium in the urine, you can use things like thiazide diuretics. If the patient has low citrate or if the patient has uric acid stones, if the urine is persistently acidic, you can use things like potassium citrate. So again, therapy can be tailored to the kind of stone, and it is, you know, basic principles are the same, but there are some differences based on the type of stone that you have.
How do nephrolithiasis and gouty diathesis differ, and what is the significance of the role of hyperuricosuria and urinary pH on stone formation? Is one more causative than the other? And what is the urine pH we should aim for, and how do we achieve that? And if the presence of hyperuricosuria related to a diet, is it beneficial to follow a special diet?
Right. Okay, so yes, all of these are slightly different. So hyperuricosuria is basically the fact that 24-hour uric acid excretion is high. And the numbers are slightly different for men or women, higher than 750 milligrams in women and 800 milligrams in men. And you're right, the diet does have an important part to play, because the most common cause of hyperuricosuria is an increase in your dietary purine intake. And purines are compounds that are found in high concentration in meat and meat products. So basically, if you are at risk for hyperuricosuria and for the formation of stones, you really need to be on a plant-based diet, which is low in purines. Now, on the other hand, gouty diathesis is basically the formation of urinary stones in people who actually already have gout. So people who have primary gout, when they get kidney stones as a result of their gout, that is gouty diathesis. So there you actually have a specific mechanism that is causing the stones. And the patients may also present with other manifestations of gout, for example, gouty arthritis. And hyperuricemia is another factor, which is the amount. So like we talked about in blood and in urine, so hyperuricemia is a high level of uric acid in the serum or in the blood. And we have seen that patients, the higher the serum uric acid, the higher the risk of gout. However, there are patients who have asymptomatic hyperuricemia, which means that they don't have the symptoms, but they have high levels of uric acid. These people, we don't prophylactically put them on therapy, but these people are at higher risk for developing stones. And like the questions that you asked about uric acid concentration and an acidic pH, the more important out of these two is actually the acidic urine pH, which if you, again, going back to our science days, if you look at the equation where a positive hydrogen ion combines with a urate ion, which is negative, it forms uric acid. The urate is soluble. It is when it gets converted to uric acid during when the urine has a urinary acidic pH, that is when you run the risk of having, you know, when we talked about the supersaturation, the solubility falls and this uric acid precipitates out in the form of crystals, which then form the basis for the stones. So patients with uric acid nephrolithiasis, the key component along with increasing your fluid intake is actually alkalinization of the urine. And again, you can do that with giving them potassium citrate.
And what is the relationship between uric acid levels and renal disease? What is the origin, and is it related to cardiovascular risk? What is the predictive value in uric acid levels of renal disease?
Right, and so that is actually the hot topic in nephrology these days, is the fact that there is possibly a mechanism that uric acid levels, not the basic ones that we all know, that 70% of the uric acid is excreted by the kidney. So it makes sense that as your kidney function will decline, there will be a decreased excretion of uric acid, and therefore you will have hyperuricemia because you're just not getting rid of the uric acid. But that is not the only relationship that we see between hyperuricemia, gout, and kidney disease. And in recent years, this is even more important, as we are seeing that the prevalence of both gout and chronic kidney disease is increasing. And one factor that people have been talking about a lot is the fact that many studies, especially in labs, have shown that when you have an elevated serum uric acid level, it independently predicts the development of chronic kidney disease. And initially, many years ago, early in the mid-19th century, we thought that that was due to the development of crystals. But as more time has passed and as we've done more research, we found that when you raise the uric acid level in rats, it actually induces glomerular hypertension and renal disease. And you can see that because when you do these specimens, you can see arteriosclerosis, glomerular injury, and tuber interstitial fibrosis. So interestingly, pilot studies have shown that when you lower these uric acid concentrations, you actually may slow the progression of renal disease. And so while we still need further clinical trials, uric acid is emerging as a potentially modifiable risk factor for CKD. So that is absolutely new research and very interesting and something we can actually do about the link. Now, as regards cardiovascular disease, there is definitely a concern that if you compare, you know, gout to another rheumatological disease like rheumatoid arthritis, that rheumatoid arthritis, gout, chronic kidney disease, the one thing that's common to all of them is a chronic, low-grade systemic inflammatory response. And this response is actually central to the accelerated atherogenesis and a high rate of cardiovascular disease that's present in all these conditions. Now, definitive studies are not there yet for us to definitely link high uric acid levels, chronic kidney disease, and cardiovascular risk, but we do know that mortality is higher in these patients, and we think one unifying hypothesis may be this low-grade systemic inflammation that's present in all of these. So definitely this is an area of great concern in these patients. And interestingly, there has been, you know, you talked about the predictive values of uric acid in renal disease. There has been one recent study which followed over 3,000 patients for a period of 5 years. The study came out of Taiwan, and what they found was that patients who had persistently high levels of uric acid did end up developing a new onset chronic kidney disease over a longitudinal period of time. So again, definitely associative studies, but nothing definitive, but an area of increased concern within the renal as well as the rheumatological population.
What is the prevalence of gout in the world? Are there differences between sex and age? And is crystalluria a positive predictor of the disease?
Yeah, so gout, the prevalence is increasing steadily worldwide, and especially in the United States. Globally, if you were to put the entire world's population, the prevalence is over 1%. But in the United States, where I practice, it's estimated that around 4% of the adult population has gout. Now, there are some, like the Oceania countries, the native New Zealanders, they have an extremely high prevalence of gout. It varies widely, but the one key factor is throughout the world, the incidence and the prevalence of gout is increasing. And gout is now the most common type of inflammatory arthropathy. As far as differences between sex and age, Men do have a higher prevalence, 3 to 6 times higher prevalence than women. But after 70 years of age, the difference between men and women is less prevalent. And this is because less prominent, because this reflects the fact that younger women don't really get gout, but as they increase in age and they become postmenopausal, their risk almost equals that of men. Now, going back to crystallurea, so crystallurea is the presence of crystals in the urine. This may suggest, but it's not definitely predictive of stone formation. This is because we go back to that concept that we discussed earlier, which is supersaturation. So you may have crystals in the urine, and that is because you have reached this maximum solubility concentration. However, so it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a kidney stone, though again, you're at high risk for it. However, if you have a patient who has clinical symptoms that suggest gout, we can definitely diagnose gout if you find these crystals when you aspirate from a joint or a tophus. And these crystals, these monosodium urate crystals, can be easily seen by polarized light microscopy. They are needle-shaped. They have a negative sign of birefringence, and they are large, long crystals. And so if you have the crystals during an acute attack from a joint or a tophus, that has the highest diagnostic value for gout. But if you have crystals in the urine, you do know that the patient is at risk because they've already exceeded their supersaturation, but not necessarily diagnostic of having a kidney stone. So two different diseases.
Dr. Niyar, would you like to make any final comment?
Yes, I think thank you very much for inviting me for this. And this is a topic that's dear to my heart and definitely an area of growing concern within the community, especially with the risk of hyperuricemia, chronic kidney disease, and its effect on cardiovascular disease, especially as we see an increasing prevalence in all these diseases globally. I feel that in the next 5 to 10 years, we are going to get answers and hopefully be able to modify some of our risk factors. So I appreciate your time and inviting me to speak for this.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you in Microscopio.
Thank you.
We are in El Microscopio, a program about clinical chemistry and laboratory medicine. We'll be right back.
NSC World Lab Congress 2017. Scientific information, main topics, multi-omics and laboratory medicine, autoimmune disease, allergy, cardiovascular disease, bone and joint diseases, diabetes mellitus and metabolic syndrome, critical care, emergency medicine, genetic disease, endocrinology, hemostasis, hematology, laboratory errors and patient safety, infectious disease, liver and gastrointestinal diseases, laboratory management and information technology, oncology, neurological disease, pharmacogenetics, pharmacogenomics, pediatric laboratory medicine, pregnancy and neonatology, point of care testing, renal function and injury, quality assessment, standardization, traceability, toxicology, drugs of abuse, technology, instrumentation and method evaluation, vitamins and nutrition, metabolomics.
This is El Microscopio on infobiochimica.com.
El Microscopio in the world, our correspondents in every country. Alberto Barrantes in Costa Rica. Álvaro Justiniano Gross in Bolivia. Ana Leticia Maselli in Guatemala. Carmen Cecilia Almonacid Urrego in Colombia. Cristina Cerveto from Uruguay. Eduardo Aranda in Chile. Graciela Velázquez from Paraguay. María del Carmen Pasquel from Ecuador.
El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
A way of looking at knowledge.
Alex Socarraz, Executive Vice President of Commercial Operations at Ortho Clinical Diagnostics, he has extensive commercial and general management experience in the healthcare medical devices industry in the US, Latin America and Europe. Socarraz earned a Master of Business Administration degree from Nova Southeastern University, where he was a member of Sigma Beta Delta International Honor Society in Business, and a Bachelor of Science degree in Chemistry and Math from the University
Alex
of Miami.
Alex Socarraz of Ortho Clinical Diagnostics, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
Could you please provide a quick overview of Ortho and your role there?
Well, maybe I'll start a little bit telling you about Ortho and then tell you about me. So Ortho is a company that has been in the in vitro diagnostic space for over 75 years. We are a top in vitro diagnostics company. Our businesses are focused predominantly in two key areas, the clinical laboratory space, which is mostly chemistry and immunoassay technology, as well as immunohematology, where we are the market leader with the number one a market share position there. My role is the Executive Vice President of Global Commercial Operations, where I lead the company's basically, anything that touches a customer from sales, service, and global marketing for the regions, making sure that our customer operations are well suited to the market needs and to achieve the objectives of the company.
And since Ortho became independent about 2 years ago, what has the company been focusing on and what is driving its strategy?
You know, that is a great question. Ortho, one of the big things that has been happening at Ortho for the last couple of years has been really driving the stand-up activities from the company. As you probably know, private equity firm acquired the Ortho business from Johnson & Johnson back on June 30th of 2014. In the last 2 years, we have focused our strategy and redefined our path forward in the market. We have reinvigorated our focus on growth in all markets around the world where we do business. We have been able to really define clearly, what our path is going to be to differentiate ourselves from the competition with our strategy on focusing on the core and our key lines of business and making sure that we are delivering on our objectives in those key lines of businesses. And probably the thing that we're most proud about is the fact that after a time, Ortho has been able to launch many new products to the market. We've launched two new revolutionary analyzers in the immunohematology space, which, as I mentioned, we're the global market leader on, and also some key new assays for our immunoassay franchise, which I think are going to be very important for our business going forward, and that were technologies and advancements that our customers were really looking to us for. And I think they're very happy to see the progress that we're making.
Ortho is very well known for its vitro system. Are there any other new products or systems technologies in the pipeline?
Yes, I will Well, first of all, I will tell you that, you know, on the immunohematology side, we just introduced two new systems. They're called the OrthoVision and OrthoVision Max. These are the types of analyzers that a blood bank would use to do blood typing and cross-matching, which I think are very important parts of the acute care industry that we play in. And the Vision and Vision Max really are revolutionary because they change the way that a customer manages their workflow, taking analyzers that have traditionally been batch testing analyzers or batch testing technologies to more random access and being able to run a sample as it arrives into the lab, being able to deliver in more important and critical turnaround time that is so important for the blood bank these days. So I think here Ortho is really standing apart from the rest of the industry and bringing revolutionary new technology to the market. As it refers to our Vitro systems, we are very, very focused. And as part of that focus on the core strategy, we are working very hard to deliver the next generation of Vitro's platforms, which will increase the throughput of our technology, which is something that our customers have been asking us for, and endeavor to also expand the menu of Vitros, both on chemistry, using our revolutionary dry slide technology, as well as our immunoassay part of the menu, which are very critical focus areas for us right now. So a lot of work going on to ensure that in the future we can deliver new technologies, new products that our customers have been really asking us for the last several years.
What trends are you seeing in the clinical laboratory space, and how is Ortho keeping pace with those changes?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're seeing in the lab space, and I think this is pretty universal around the world, is we're seeing probably some major trends. You know, the first is consolidation, and I think more and more we see that with the push towards standardization and managing of reimbursement in key markets and being able to manage the economics of healthcare, this is really driving that consolidation approach and standardization, meaning that there are, you know, a lot of hospitals and a lot of healthcare customers that are merging, and we're seeing that tendency happen all over the world, most prominently in the developed markets like the U.S. and Europe, but now beginning to come in areas like China and other major markets around the world. So that's happening, and that's one of the trends that we see. We also see a clear trend towards automation and process improvement in the laboratory in order to deliver better quality and support customers in managing the costs of their operation as efficiently as possible. So these are trends that we clearly see and trends that Ortho is working actively not only to respond to today, but also preparing itself to continue to respond to in the future.
And what differentiates Ortho from its peers?
You know, I would say that Ortho really stands apart because of our technology. And when you think of our Vitro's technology, we are different from everybody else. We have a technology called the dry slide technology, and our analyzers are the only ones in the world that don't require water when compared to the other top competitors in the market. And I'm talking about, you know, in the general chemistry and immunoassay space. We believe that's very relevant because one of the big challenges around the world today is water and sustainability. And the quality of the water that is required to run clinical chemistry analyzers is becoming a critical issue in many places. Our technology not only offers the ability to run without using water, but it also provides significantly higher quality that we believe is a differential advantage for many of our customers. It is also very efficient cost-wise, because the level of waste that you get from dry technology versus traditional wet chemistry is significantly better. So we believe that differentiates us significantly from a technological standpoint. On the other hand, now being the only completely independent standalone in vitro diagnostics company gives us the ability to be very customer-centric and focused on delivering simplicity, agility, and the type of relationship that our customers want to have with a partner that is simple to do business with. And one of the things that we were very proud to receive just a couple of months ago is U.S. Service Track, which is an independent third-party organization that looks at service levels within the IVD industry in the U.S., actually named Ortho number one in service, which I think is really great. And that comes as a consequence of surveys that they do with many of the customers themselves and the customer's voice. So we're very happy to see that that focus on the customer is being seen by our customers, is being recognized by the industry, and that Ortho is being able to achieve significant milestones in that space. That's certainly part of where our focus is.
How does Ortho view emerging markets? Are they a priority? Is there growth potential?
I think the answer to the growth potential question is a resounding absolutely yes. We clearly see that the emerging markets are an integral and important part of the growth strategy of the in vitro diagnostics industry, and they're definitely a key part of what Ortho sees as a key priority in our strategy. As part of our stand-up activities, we've taken very meaningful decisions to ensure that even in some emerging countries where the business today may not be so large, that we bet on the future and stand up the company in countries like Chile, in countries like Colombia, in Latin America, in countries like Philippines and Thailand, in Asia Pacific, to ensure that we have a presence that will allow us to keep growing and keep contributing to those markets. And in many ways, that technology that I alluded to before is exceptionally positioned to support customers in the emerging markets, because as we know, the emerging markets bring different challenges that our customers need to respond to there. And I believe our technology is uniquely able to respond to some of the needs that they have, like the water example that I gave before. So they are definitely a priority. We definitely see the growth potential, and our focus is definitely there.
What is Ortho's view of the Latin American clinical diagnostic sector, and what are the opportunities and challenges?
Well, you know, Latin America is one of our most important regions. It is not one of our largest, but definitely one of our most important ones. And from a market share perspective, globally, Latin America is one of the regions where Ortho has one of its largest market shares in the clinical laboratory space. So it's an area that we put a lot of focus into, and we have a very significant business in Latin America. You know, one of the things that we've seen in the last couple of years is it's been a little bit of a challenge for the Latin American economies, and I think we've felt the strengthening of the belt for many of our customers. I think with the global strengthening of the dollar, it has made some of our Latin American currencies a bit weaker, and most notably in Brazil, and some of the other key countries like Colombia have experienced significant devaluation of their currencies. So these are challenges that our customers are trying to respond to, and that we as a company are trying to find ways to partner with them to manage through those challenges in such a way that not only we continue to be present, we continue to support them, but ensure that we do everything possible to remain a trusted partner in those markets for those customers. And in fact, this year we were very pleased to see, because despite all of that economic turmoil that's going on, Ortho is still posting some pretty nice growth numbers in Latin America. So we're very happy with the progress that we're making, and it looks like our strategy of being customer-centric, close to the customers, and ensuring that we differentiate how our technology solves their problems is making a difference.
Does Ortho have any Latin American-specific initiatives, and what are the growth drivers in this market?
Yes. One of the areas, we're very strong in clinical laboratories, but one of the areas that we feel is very important for Latin America, and I've been around and talked to many customers, is this area of where we have key expertise in blood banking and our immunohematology technologies. You know, one of the biggest challenges that our customers have in the blood bank space is ensuring that whatever technology they use, and especially their processes and protocols, lead to a safer blood supply. That is to say that when a patient has to be transfused, it's important for the unit of blood that is selected to be compatible with that patient, and that they don't have, you know, a reaction to that blood. In this, Ortho is working very hard not only to deliver technologies that help our customers truly make the blood supply safer, but working as a partner in professional development and education to ensure that physicians know the implications of how those decisions are made, what technologies are able to deliver, and, you know, essentially why, you know, automation in the blood bank space is very important to ensuring that we minimize errors and improve quality. Because one error in the blood banking environment could mean one life lost, and one life lost is one life too many. So Ortho wants to be the partner that helps make that the best that it can be. I also wanted to say that we are also focused on delivering laboratory automation solutions to the Latin America market and ensuring that we help customers in our clinical lab areas improve workflow and ensure that they improve quality. And in the drive to seek standardization, we also want to be there with flexible and scalable solutions that help them meet their needs, not only in larger labs, but also in smaller labs. So here as well, we are developing a portfolio of products that responds to those needs. And specific to automation, we recently launched our Vitros Automation Solutions, which is our next generation automation track, which endeavors to connect several of our instruments together with pre-analytical capability and post-analytical capability in order to really help customers deliver efficient workflow to their laboratories, especially as they go higher up in the food chain of volume.
What are Ortho's current global initiatives?
Well, as I said, I think expanding our leadership in immunohematology is very critical. Driving our automation strategy is very important because we feel it is meaningful to the consolidation and standardization needs of the market. Expanding our immunoassay menu is a key area of focus, and ensuring that Ortho grows above market in every market that we participate in is very, very important. As I mentioned, I believe that our technology is differentiated from that of our competitors, and we believe that it offers a differentiated advantage to our customers to help them really make their processes more efficient, lean, and higher quality. So in this, I think that we are very focused in ensuring that as a solution provider, Ortho can be a partner, and that our customer-centric approach mean that Ortho is the most trusted partner that they can choose because we're a simple partner to do business with, and they know that they can count on us when looking to their laboratory diagnostic needs.
And what are the greatest barriers in the diagnostics space globally?
Well, you've probably read a lot in the newspaper about many austerity measures that are happening around the world, or the need to offer more universal coverage. And I think one of the biggest challenges that it brings, that the laboratory diagnostic field is experiencing globally, is the crunch on reimbursement and the active measures being taken by certain governments through austerity measures to try to reduce the amount of testing and better manage and control the economics of healthcare. I think the healthcare field is an exceptional field to be in, mostly because we have a very significant and growing customer base. Population growth is happening. People are getting older around the world. And, you know, about 70% of the information that a physician uses to make decisions is derived from a laboratory test of some sort. So therefore, the diagnostics industry is a good industry to be a part of. But our customers every day are faced with how to do it more efficiently, in a more lean manner, and with lower costs. And I think not only are they having to do that because in order to survive, but it's also true that they're doing that to respond to their customers, which in some cases are their own governments that are saying, hey, I need to do this more cost efficiently, and we need to reduce the reimbursement on these tests. And in order to do the same at a lower price, they need to become more efficient and find ways to weed out waste from the processes. And I think that's a big challenge that companies like Ortho are positioning ourselves to help our customers be able to respond to those emerging challenges and needs.
Thank you, Alex Zuckerberg.
The next IFTC World Lab Congress 2017 will be held in Durban, South Africa, on 22nd to 25th October 2017. It is hosted by the South African Association for Clinical Biochemistry and Laboratory Medicine.
Register in our website, www.infobiochimica.com, and receive El Microscopio's newsletter with information of new programs and the most relevant news of the week.
o microscópio.
She says, wake up, it's no use pretending. I'll keep stealing, breathing her. Birds are leaving over autumn's ending. One of us will die inside these arms. Eyes wide open, naked as we came. One will spread our ashes round the yard. She says, if I leave before you, darling, don't you waste me in the ground. I lay smiling like a sleeping children. One of us will die inside these arms. Eyes wide open, spread our ashes round the
Microscopio, a way of looking at knowledge.
El Microscopio is presenting the IFCC Warlock Congress 2017.
This is El Microscopio on infobioquimica.com.
El Microscopio in the world, our correspondents in every country. Rosa Isabel Sierra Amor from Mexico, José Jara from Peru, Milagros de la Rosa from Dominican Republic, Miriam Aguilera from Honduras, Rafael Calafel from Spain, Mario Chavez Villalobos from Costa Rica, Dante Janias from Bolivia, Leverton Ortiz from Chile.
El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
An online radio program about biochemistry.
News. The IFCC is pleased to announce that Professor Howard Morris of Adelaide, Australia, has been elected as IFCC President-elect. The term of IFCC President-elect will commence on January 1st, 2017, to be confirmed as IFCC President for the period January 1st, 2018 until 31st December 2020. We congratulate Professor Howard Morris and wish him a fruitful cooperation for the promotion of clinical chemistry and laboratory medicine worldwide.
News.
IFCC is proud to announce its distinguished awards for presentation at the IFCC Congress in October 2017, Durban, South Africa.
News.
The IFCC Distinguished Award are the highest honors that the Federation can bestow to scientists and clinicians who work in clinical chemistry and laboratory medicine or related disciplines worldwide in recognition of their outstanding achievements to publicize their exceptional research and other contributions that have improved medical and health care and to stimulate and encourage other scientists to accelerate their efforts in advancing clinical chemistry and laboratory medicine. Nominations are welcome from the president or national representative of the nominee's national society, which should be a full member of the IFCC. Each nomination should contain a statement as to the reasons for nomination, a full CV of the nominees including bibliography, and other letters of support, which are optional. They should be sent to Mr. Colin Lancy of the IFCC office, and the closing date for receipt of nomination is January 31st, 2017. For more information, you can visit www.ifcc.org.
News. In Africa.
The 14th International Congress of Pediatric Laboratory Medicine will also be held in Durban, South Africa, from the 20th to the 22nd October 2017.
El Microscopio. Agenda. Offering courses, workshops, seminars, congresses.
Agenda. Medical Symposium 2016 in Harare, Zimbabwe, on December 14, 2016. International Congress on Quality in Laboratory Medicine in Helsinki, February the 9th to February the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
The Winter School Advanced Cytometry Applications in Immunology at Saint-Étienne in France, March the 6th to March the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
The 4th EFLM BT European Conference on Pre-Analytical Phase, Improving Quality in the Pre-Analytical Phase through Innovation in Amsterdam, Netherlands, on March 24th to March 25th, 2017.
Agenda.
The 7th Baltic Transfusion Medicine Congress and the 1st Latvian Congress in Laboratory Medicine in Riga, May the 11th to May the 13th, 2017.
Agenda.
The Euromed Lab Athens 2017 Satellite Meeting, Management of Inborn Errors of Metabolism from Diagnosis to Treatment, Athens, Greece, June the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
The Euromed Lab Athens 2017 Satellite Meeting, Metabolic Bone Disease, The Role of Clinical Laboratory in Athens, Greece, June the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
Euromed Lab Athens 2017 Satellite Meeting, Diabetes in Athens, Greece, June the 15th, 2017.
This is El Microscopio on infobiochimica.com.
El Microscopio in the world, our correspondents in every country. Stella Raimondo from Uruguay, Fernando Ruiz Cerda from Chile, Montserrat González from Paraguay, Isabel Fierro from Ecuador, José Francisco Valle from Mexico, Oswaldo Ruiz Narváez from Costa Rica, Patrocinio Truecas from Spain, Rodolfo Aquino Cáceres from El Salvador.
City bird, city bird, fly away from my window, from my window. 'Cause you don't sing like the birds from home sing. Your song is dying. I set the table for the ghosts in my home, my home. Pour the wine and raise a glass for the guests in my home. Dendrin in their skin and in their bones, still in their bones. The vision scares, but none compares to the dread of drinking alone. After the tower was tuned to a tune, all the world, refugees all, were refused by the banker. They can never go in, so I let them in. Oh, city bird, city bird, fly away from my window, from my window. 'Cause you don't sing like the birds from home sing. Your song is dying. Oh, la, la, la. And care for the guests in my home. But in their sleep they claw and scream the devil home.
The devil's come home.
But that nightmare does not compare to the demons and sleeping alone. After the tower was tuned to a tune, all the world, refugees all, were refused by the banker. And with nowhere to go, they walked. wash up on Skid Row, a city bird, city bird, fly away from my window, from my window, 'cause you don't the birds from home sing. Your song is dying. Oh, la, la, la.
Microscopia. Infobiochimica.com.
El Microscopia.